Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna of The Inside Zone. Matt, I am back home after Notre Dame's home finale, a 45-7 demolition of Wake Forest that had a lot of extras to it. I mean, you had the Sam Hartman extra. You had the NBC extra, that contract extended through 29. You had Jack Swarbrick and Father John Jenkins' final home game.
Was it? They didn't mention that.
They didn't bring that up on the broadcast. Yeah, you had some girl hitting Sam Hartman's hot cocoa with a marshmallow. I
missed that too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So Sam Hartman posted.
I saw some signs and I saw him egging the crowd on, but I didn't.
Yes. He said he had hot cocoa on the sideline after he had come out. And he said someone just launched a marshmallow that landed in his hot cocoa. And then he looked up and saw some girl had thrown it. I don't know if she put her number on it. Dinah encouraged me to try to find
that was the other way around. It is like, that's not good. Like college.
So yes, a lot happened, including a 100-yard game by a wide receiver.
Yes,
the first time
since
the Fiesta Bowl, Marcus Freeman's first game. So yeah, it's like, I think this season is the haze in the barn on the season in terms of like what it can be, what it means, yada, yada. But There was still quite a bit to unpack from Saturday as Sam Hartman wraps up his Notre Dame career in South Bend. He did say there are two more games to go, which I would seem to indicate that there won't be an opt-out of whatever bowl game Notre Dame is in. Notre Dame is still in the running for a 10-win season. If they played like they did today, they should get there.
Yeah, you know, David Hale at ESPN had a tweet today. It was like, Notre Dame's one of, I think, four Power Five teams that will have won eight games or more, and I think four straight seasons. And I'm like, that can't be right. Then I'm like, oh yeah, Ohio State played like six games in 2020, so and Notre Dame played a full season, was really good that year. So it does make sense. It was a typical home game. It was cleaner than the Pitt game. I would argue maybe Sam Hartman's best game in Notre Dame uniform. Statistically, it's right up there. In fact, it might be the best statistically. Not that it was perfect, but I thought especially
certainly against the Power Five team.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And again, Wake's not the Wake that they were with Sam Hartman was there. But I thought it was a good all-around performance from Notre Dame on both sides of the ball. Now, not perfect. We saw some of the same, you know, kind of head-scratching mistakes that I've plagued them all year. I thought the end of half, you know, offense was your face is saying it all right now. To waste your last time out of a spike and then have to kick a field goal with 9 seconds left because it's fourth down.
After catching a pass for negative yardage, I think. Like that was the play after a 2-minute break. It was interesting.
But Otter Gasmay got over the 100-yard mark. He acknowledged afterward, maybe that is his last game in Notre Dame uniform.
As did Marcus Freeman, not about Marcus Freeman, but about Otter Gasmay.
If anyone saw Florida State tonight and Jordan Travis's ankle, guys, if you have any chance of going to the NFL or making money doing this, go, do it. I've always said that, maybe a little bit less so now with NIL involved, but like, especially running backs, you have only so many years left in you. Take advantage would be my unsolicited advice. And the receivers stepped up today in a way that they really hadn't. Well, they hadn't all year and really hadn't in about 2 years. I'm sure you know this because you brought it up. Who was Notre Dame's last 100-yard receiver?
It was Kevin Austin and Lorenzo Styles. Okay. They actually had three 100-yard receiving performances. However, one of them was by a running back who now plays wide receiver, Chris Tyree.
Styles was the leader in the Fiesta Bowl, who's now at Ohio State. And he turned the ball over on a punt in a game this year, but that was about it. But look, it was senior day, much needed, stress-free win at home, coming off the loss 2 weeks ago at Clemson, get them feeling good going into the Stanford finale next week. And some news that dropped, I think, right at kickoff, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how they presented it to you guys in the press box. Not surprising news, but the timing of it a little, I mean, I didn't expect it to come.
I got a heads up about 15, 20 minutes beforehand that on their pregame show at 3:00, they'd be announcing it. Like typically in the past, like, these have been announced more at spring games.
Right.
I remember covering a handful of like, hey, it's the new, another five-year deal. This again was a 5-year deal through 2029. I thought I think the last one may have been a 10-year deal. Now that I say it out loud, I think
you're right. Shorter's better though. Jim Delaney started that with the Big Ten in his last deal, and honestly, college football TV rights have not been the same since. You're seeing that.
No, they're just no. It made sense.
More money, hey, short term.
The league you're affiliated with did a 87-year deal, and that is may destroy the league. So go 5 years at a time. I don't have a great handle on what the numbers behind it are, but when I did a big sort of analysis of this and what it could have been in the summer, talking to media executives, strategists, analysts, and then just sort of people in the industry, it felt like $55-60 million was going to be a reasonable target. And Notre Dame's point of view is like, if you can get within $10-15 million of the Big Ten and the SEC, you can make up that gap in fundraising and just sort of being smart with what you're doing. I tend to think that's a completely reasonable position to take if you're Notre Dame. And if you're NBC, I mean, look, we both have reported this. We've talked about it on this podcast. NBC wanted, or Notre Dame wanted NBC to get into the Big Ten pool. It did. They felt like that would be a signal that there would be more money to spend on Notre Dame, not less, which might sound counterintuitive at first, but I think when you look at the whole package, and then you look at, hey, NBC is, or Notre Dame, excuse me, is your best property. If you're NBC, as I try to watch a 14-10 Nebraska Wisconsin game in the background. And look, Notre Dame is, they're the fourth most watched team in college football this year after Colorado, Alabama, and Ohio State. And the ratings for Notre Dame this year, I want to say it's the best in 10 years.
We track with those home games.
Yeah. They're very high this year. And look, the Ohio State game, which the audience had a lot to do with Ohio State, obviously, as well. But that was the most watched Notre Dame game on NBC since the Florida State game in 1993. So good. It was long way of saying, if you're Notre Dame, it's a good time to be up for a new deal.
Yeah. I mean, if what's out there, and I say out there almost figuratively, because this is just kind of like what me and you had heard over months on end, but if you're anywhere within that ballpark of $60 million, you got to be feeling pretty good. You know, it's a short-term deal. Again, 5-6 years from now, who the hell knows what college football is going to look like? Again, this time last year, you know, the idea of Oregon and Washington being in the Big Ten, Stanford and Cal being in the ACC was just nonsensical. I mean, it's
just a rapidly, Twitter fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rapidly changing sport in that regard. So the shorter, the better, especially when you have a proven, you know, product or at least brand that you know is going to draw eyeballs. But, you know, to put it in other terms, I mean, Notre Dame still gets a paycheck from the ACC for its, you know, non-football sports. The Big Ten deal, I mean, I think on the high end for those teams that are getting full distribution will probably approach 70 eventually. But even then, like, that's going to be a gradual increase. And if you're Oregon and Washington and you have the safe haven of the Big Ten, you got in at a discount rate. I mean, those schools are getting $30 million a year with $1 million a year increase until the next deal. And you compare that to some like Notre Dame, who really has no strings attached, right? They have a lot more control over everything other than where their regular season finale will be broadcast next week at Stanford, which is another rant for another day. And I don't think it's Notre Dame's fault at all, but you're sitting pretty right now. I think if the number is anywhere near there, you got to feel good about yourself if you're Notre Dame moving forward. So, I mean, look, next year's home schedule is lacking. Let's face it. It's not good. Anywhere near as good as this year's home schedule is. But there's a lot to like about the product and the brand and the value of it moving forward. And, you know, it certainly won't hurt to have, you know, the former Notre Dame's, or excuse me, former NBC Sports president, Pete Bavakwa, calling the shots for Notre Dame moving forward, you know, when you're kind of in a symbiotic relationship with NBC starting next year as well. So you got to feel good about that. I will be curious, like, the broadcast stuff, you know, we've heard all the complaints. I think there's a reason they put Noah Eagle and Todd Blackledge on for the main event, which is Ohio State. I'll be curious, like you mentioned it, like, right now, NBC's primetime Big Ten game right now is Nebraska, Wisconsin. Last year was Michigan State, or last week it was Michigan State, Ohio State. Week before that, I think it was Purdue, Michigan. Like, that B tier, if you will, of Big Ten. Like Big Noon, Fox is getting Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, et cetera. When you add four new schools in the mix next year, you know, I'm curious what that B package is going to be better, right? You'll have right. USC, Oregon or something of that nature.
You'll have Notre Dame at USC.
Exactly. You know, how does that kind of figure into things moving forward? And I think that's the next thing to watch, especially if, you know, we all know how unhappy Florida State and Clemson and several others in the ACC are right now. You know, at what point does the grant of rights, if you will, have diminishing returns and you take that haircut and find a way into the Big Ten or the SEC? And what does that mean for the TV properties elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a good time to be a free agent, even if you wanted to be back with NBC the whole time and NBC wanted you back with them the whole time. If Notre Dame wanted to, I think, hold NBC's feet to the fire, this would have been a time that you could have done it. I don't think that they did. And I think that, you know, Jack Swarbrick, what were the final boxes to check before, you know, walking off into the sunset? Is just the Under Armour deal, which, you know, we can have a discussion about whether that was the move or not. But
did they ever announce that? Did Notre Dame themselves ever announce that?
I don't know if they did, but like
Under Armour tweeted it.
They're making some money on that. They're making some money on that. NBC, they're making some money on that. College football playoff is set. Notre Dame has access to it. That's the stuff that Swarbrick needed to get done before getting out of here. He got done before getting out of here, so I got to give him credit for that. Did not win the coin toss today as an honorary captain. It's going to live with him for a long time. You know, like you get your one shot opportunity, just didn't get it done there.
Game ball for beating USC ain't what it was 6 weeks ago, by the way.
No, really, it's not. It really isn't. I mean, that's just a 7-5 team. I mean,
lost five of their last six, the one win being over a terrible Cal team with a 13 quarterback that missed.
Also escaping Arizona barely in overtime. I mean,
Arizona's good, but yeah,
they could have finished the season on a 7-game losing streak. But I think Notre Dame overall, like under Swarbrick's leadership, is in a pretty good spot. I mean, it's far from perfect, which we have talked about a million times on the show and written about as well. But I think overall, like kind of from the fundamentals of this place are strong. They need enhancement, as Marcus Freeman would tell you, on a facilities point of view, probably some recruiting infrastructure. And then maybe this is a good jumping off point into the coaching staff. What does this coaching staff look like when Notre Dame opens the home slate in Notre Dame Stadium next year? I don't know. You know, they finished well offensively, but I do think the first half, you know, you already referenced the end of half situation, is kind of one of those things you're just like, guys, it's just got to be better than this. And it's felt a little bit stuck for a while now. You know, they got loose by the end of it, but a lot of it had, I think, that was buoyed by what? Onside kick, turnover on downs, forced fumble recovery from JD Bertrand as well and Riley Mills. So offensively, maybe it was never going to be great this year based on what Notre Dame had at receiver and then lost in Jaden Thomas and Mitchell Evans. But that will be an interesting, I think, off-season prognosis that Marcus Freeman makes on that side of the ball, and I'm not sure how he views that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope Marcus Freeman's a head coach. He's going to be entering his third year as head coach. I'm not saying he needs everything figured out right now on November 18th before the regular season finale.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hope whatever he decides to do is done within a week of the Stanford game. If that's deciding we need to go in a different direction with our offense coordinator, deciding we need to transfer portal quarterback, which at least the decision of them needing that appears to have been made. Yep. But again, how you target that potential QB will revolve in large part, I think, around what your offense needs to be and who that offense coordinator is, whether it is or isn't Jared Parker. And I just think time is of the essence in that regard. I mean, you saw it, last week, Notre Dame's bye week. There were, entering that weekend, two openings, Michigan State and Northwestern, both of which were for completely non-football related reasons. And Sunday, Texas A&M moved on. Boise State moved on, and Monday San Diego State and Mississippi State moved on. And I'm sure when we wake up tomorrow morning, we'll see some more movement, and there's going to be domino effects to everything that happens. I mean, I mentioned A&M, you mentioned the first game next year. It's against A&M, right? Like, yep. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of money, a lot of people jockeying for jobs. I just hope for Notre Dame's sake, they figure out their direction and move forward as quickly as possible. And get it together, right? Like, here's our OC, whether it's Parker or not. Here's what we want a quarterback, and here's the pitch we're going to give him of what this offense will be. Look at random OC's track record, and what he's done. Maybe that's a package deal from somewhere. I don't know. But you know, I hope we're not having this conversation 2 weeks from now on conference championship weekend, and that there's at least some clarity of, all right, they're in the market for this, this, and this, or hey, you know what? They're going to stick with things. Here's how they're going to improve upon what happened. And you know, you mentioned the first half and other shortcomings today, you know, really in the weeds, but felt like all the things we were enamored by them against, let's face it, subpar competition at the beginning of the year, whether it was Central Michigan or Tennessee State or whomever, like it just felt like it never really got better. It was like, oh, look at them. Going for the kill shot in the second quarter, like going for the extra touchdown in the final 30 seconds against an overmatched team. Like, man, I love, they're aggressive. They've got a quarterback. This is great. And then I was like, all right, they played Ohio State, who's really freaking good, and there's no shame on the surface of losing to Ohio State. But then it was just like, did they ever get better? I don't think they did.
Offensively? No. Yeah, it's kind of hard to say that
they did. For everyone. Like, that's not the play caller, the quarterback, or whoever.
Yeah, I would say that the receivers got better based on almost entirely today. It is kind of one of those things where you look at
pluses and minuses. So, yeah, like.
Yeah, Flores, Faison, Greathouse. I mean, you've covered this team long enough. I know, God knows I have. Like, freshman receivers don't do it here. You know, it's Floyd, TJ Jones, Kevin Stefferson, like that's kind of about it. Like, there just aren't a lot. Like, it's and I talked to a former Notre Dame coach this week about that, just to try to get a, like, what is going on here? Like, why is this not working better than it is? And he's just right. Like, you have to remember that Boykin didn't do anything till senior year. Claypool sort of did some stuff his junior year, but he was a senior year breakout player. That's just how the wide receiver position is operated for Notre Dame. It's just like, guys don't do it right away here. Notre Dame with Flores, Faison, and Greathouse, you look at them today, 15 catches, I think it was a little over 200 yards and two touchdowns. Like, Notre Dame doesn't have a choice. How many teams have we covered at Notre Dame where if you said, by the way, your freshman class of receivers, that's what you got. You have to play them. There are not many offenses that would have functioned very well. And this one didn't either. But you wonder if today is at least like, okay, this is what it can look like. Because I'm not sure. We've never seen all three of those guys on together. I mean, we haven't seen Jaden Greathouse really do anything since the NC State game. Jordan Faison has had a couple of moments. It's clear like there are more moments coming for him. Right. Rico Flores, you sort of looked at it and be like, is this guy really good, or is this guy playing because they have nobody else?
They've tried to, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've run him into the ground in some games because they did not have anybody else. I think what Flores showed today was like some stuff. I'm like, ooh, okay, you're making some competitive catches here. We really haven't seen a whole lot of from wide receivers. Like, they won outside the numbers today in a way that they haven't in the past. So that's something that I think you can take away from today for Notre Dame. That I'm not saying that these guys are going to be lights out every week, but you feel like you have some guys that can operate and move the ball down the field for you in a way that, geez, before today, I'm not sure. Like, if you said that Flores, Greathouse, and Faison would past 200 yards and 15 catches, I would have said you were insane. That there's just no way that was going to happen. And they look good doing it. It didn't feel fluky as I was watching it.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with. And Roback was at the top of our list. As someone who wears their quarter zips, polos, hoodies, and more, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've seen Roback on Audric Estime, Michael Mayer, and Kyle Hamilton. You've seen it on fans at Irish tailgates all season long, too. While the gear hasn't turned me into an All-American player or grill master, Roback is still my go-to when going for a run, taking my kids to the park, or just lounging around the house on the weekends watching football. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Roback. Go to roback.com/Irish for 20% off your purchase. That's 20% off for all customers at roback.com/Irish.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit.
We said this hypothetically, but it's the question that every team has anytime their goals are essentially eliminated is, all right, do you play the young guys for next year? Well, Notre Dame had no choice at receiver. Like this,
they were already playing the young guys for next year.
They were already playing the young guys, and they played well. Like that's not nothing. That's something that gives you a little bit of excitement. I'm tempted to say, like, all right, they're good for next year. Like, I'm tempted not to say that because it's just, you know, I think you still got to hit the portal and try to find a grad transfer there who could be a major contributor, even if it's, you know, a Ben Skowronek type, like from 2020. You know, I think you need more at that position. I don't think there's any question about it, but I do think you look at the progress some of those guys showed on a day like today on senior day, and you come away thinking not all hope is lost as far as like, all right, yet another year goes by where we have very minimal to zero improvement at the receiver position. We don't know what we're going to have going into next year. So I thought that was encouraging. Again, Rico Flores, first 100-yard receiver they've had in 2 years. Of course, he fumbles the ball away on a catch where he gets 100 on a targeting call that wasn't.
Freeman did point out, like, I'm going to have to get on him about that immediately.
Also, I don't know if I text you this or not. Faison gets the touchdown late, and Jason Garrett said that's Bavakwa's guy right there. It's Pete Bavakwa lacrosse guy.
That would be.
Garrett also said, we're getting to fourth down territory for Wake Forest at the 950 mark when it was 38-7.
We're getting there. Okay. Yeah, you know, like, we have not mentioned the defense at all in this podcast, which is probably not a fair representation of how
it's well. It's not fair.
Look, the reason I was incredibly confident Notre Dame was going to win the game was not because of Rico Flores, Jordan Faison, Jaden Greathouse, Eli Raridan, Tobias Merriweather, Estime, Hartman, Spencer Schrader, Bryce McPherson, whatever. The reason was that I knew Michael Kern was not going to be able to do a damn thing. Like, I would have been floored if they got to 10 points. They got to 7 with 2 trick plays. They had a field goal blocked. I mean, Wake Forest had no chance today because Al Golden did not give them a chance. And like, Notre Dame's sitting here for the season, 10 touchdown passes allowed, 14 interceptions. I think that they've allowed 9 touchdowns at home all year. The defense has been outstanding. You cannot throw the ball on them. You can run on them sometimes, but heck, the corners that they have with Watts at the back, you can do all sorts of interesting stuff if you're Al Golden. He does, especially with the linebacker experience and what they have on the defensive line. I mean, it's interesting because it's a defense playing at a almost elite level, but I'm not, like, how many guys off this defense are getting drafted?
Right.
You know, Ben Morrison, Xavier Watts, Cross, probably. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I guess how many first-round picks are on this defense? 1? Morrison? I don't know if anybody else on this defense gets drafted before day 3.
Yeah, it's definitely played greater than some of its parts, no question about
well,
it.
Well, I mean, what, like Watts obviously could and Cross could, but I'm just saying, like, there's not.
No, but it's not like.
Look at second and third round picks out of Notre Dame's defense over the years. Like, Justin Tucker, like, Julian Love went in the fourth round.
Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah went second round.
Yeah, went second round. Like, I don't think
he was a Buckus Award winner, too.
Right.
Like, he was a dominant college
player. Teo went in the second round.
Right.
Foskey went in the second round. Like, this defense has a lot of very, very good college players, but that's different than saying they've got a ton of pro prospects.
No, I mean, look, Ohio State plays Michigan next week. Rivalry game, both undefeated, yada, yada, yada. It's probably going to be like a 13-10 game. And it's going to be that type of game, kind of like the Notre Dame Ohio State game, because both those defenses are loaded with first and second round picks. And Notre Dame played in that type of game with Ohio State with what I would say is not a comparable roster as far as elite upperclassmen day one, day two NFL talent. Mm-hmm. Even Penn State, you know, which defensively played good enough to beat Ohio State and Michigan. Well, I mean, look at Bruce Feldman's freaks list. Like 20% of it is Penn State defenders. Yep. Like they are just creatures there. I don't see that individually on Notre Dame's side of the ball. And yet Al Golden has got them playing so strongly as a unit, where even in defeat, it's like you can only blame them so much because it's usually because the offense put them in such disadvantageous positions that they give up one big play and the dam breaks. Like we were encouraged by the secondary coming in the year in a way that we probably have never been with this program. We had our question marks with the defensive line coming in this year in a way we probably usually don't with this program. Yep. All of it, you know, to linebackers, everything, I just think has played outstanding ball. There's a reason Al Golden is Notre Dame's nominee for the Burroughs Award. Given the best assistant coach, I think he's done an outstanding job on that side of the ball. I think this has been a championship level defense, which is not something I thought in my wildest dreams I'd be saying 3 months ago entering the season. I thought this was a team that was going to outscore everyone with that line and that quarterback. Obviously, it hasn't been the case, but, you know, they're still in the same spot that I predicted they'd be in. because the defense has just been phenomenal. And to your point, 7 points against an ACC team today, that historically, again, Hartman's not there anymore, but historically has been one of the better offenses in the ACC. They score 7 points today. They're lucky to get that much. And it's like a footnote when we're talking about what went right today, because it's just kind of like the invisible standard that Al Golden has set on that side of the ball this year. It's very, very impressive. And I'll be curious when it's all said and done, when all starting 11, if you will, from this year's defense eventually exhaust their eligibility, where they all end up, even if that's as like undrafted free agents who find the way it's on NFL rosters, like Matthias Farley, right? I think just got cut in the NFL, but like, who saw that guy in a 10-year career?
Yeah, I mean, Isaac Rochelle was the seventh round pick, I think. You know, he hung around for
the 2012 defense, which was dominant. Like, they carried them to the national title game. I think they led the nation in scoring. Every single starter on that defense eventually ended up playing significant minutes, I believe, in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I don't know if their recruiting profiles outside of Tuitt, Nix, and Teo really fit that. Like, Harrison was the year before.
Fox
and Carlo
Mata was good. Like a top prospect out of high school, but like just a pretty good college player.
Bennett Jackson was a receiver initially.
Yeah,
right?
He was a three-star prospect. Like, it was a big develop, more
Kavari of a
developmental
was a freshman
story
that year.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been very, very impressive to see what they've done this year. And let's, you know, regardless of what happens with Al Golden, because he could very well be, you know, coordinator of NFL defense. And if he gets a job like that, good for him. He's certainly earned it.
Yeah.
For all the questions we have about the future of this program offensively, at the end of the day, Marcus Freeman's the head coach and he's a defensive guy. Like, he deserves a lot of credit for this too. And it has to make you sleep better at night if you're a Notre Dame fan, knowing that the defensive side of this program, if nothing else, is in really good hands moving forward.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. It's, and I think maybe that sort of gets to the fundamentals of the program being in a pretty good spot. Like, you know, coordinators change sometimes because you want them to, some because you need to change them. And Al Golden's not going to be here forever, but And even, you know, Marcus Freeman talked about this a couple of weeks ago when asked about Mike Bickens, that he's ready to be a coordinator. I think you're, if you're drawing up the ideal world for Notre Dame, probably Al Golden stays one more year. Maybe he's associate head coach. Mike Bickens is co-defensive coordinator, and he's ready to take that job in 2025. You know, that it's a good defensive staff. You know, I think, you know, we don't talk a lot about Chris O'Leary, but, you know, right. Xavier Watts has had an All-American level season. You know, it, have the other players really shined? Not really, but, you know, they, the pass efficiency defense is what it is. It's top five that way. You know, they
Watts is up for the Nagurski Trophy. I mean, one of five, I believe, like best defense player in the country. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they don't give up big plays. They don't give up, you know, they give up one third and long to Ohio State, but that literally is the only third or fourth and long that they've given up all damn season. So it's in a sport where very little is reliable, Notre Dame's defense is. And like, that's, it's a credit to the players. It's a credit to Al Golden. It's something that should travel to Stanford. It's something that should travel to Tampa or Orlando, which jogs my memory of like, how today started in the press box where,
oh yeah, you texted me and I didn't really follow. Tell us.
So yeah, they have chili in the press box, which was delicious, but there was a rep from the Pop-Tarts Bowl who managed to spill an entire crock pot full of chili, on the floor. Somehow like the crock landed right side up where it didn't go everywhere. It was just more of like a fountain, effervescing, around the press box with beans and meat. But yeah, that was about all that went wrong today, I think, for Notre Dame. Was,
do you have like one of those like fancy orange bowl blazers? Did that get ruined?
No, I mean, the Pop-Tarts Bowl is a little bit more understated in terms of their wardrobe, more of a, just a kind of a dark blue. They'd be easy to miss. Like you have to walk by and like, which I did, and to be like squint at the logo on their polo. I was like, it's not Roback. What is it? It's Pop-Tarts. So yeah, no, they came through that. Okay. I didn't get a chance to catch up with them.
They sent me a box full of, I got a text from their PR guy before they went official with the name change saying, what's your favorite Pop-Tart flavor? And I thought, this is the randomest question I've ever gotten from anyone in my life.
I heard French vanilla is a good one. Is that true? Paul Burmeister texted me about the French vanilla Pop-Tarts. And he's like, this is a secret delicacy, so I'm going to have to try this out.
That actually sounds pretty good. I was unaware that existed. I said cherry, and sure enough, like a box arrived at my door at breakfast time when I was figuring out what to give my four-year-old, and it was like, ta-da. Unlike today, the Pop-Tarts Bowl came through for one half of the podcast. Winner.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's like, look, Notre Dame's going to almost certainly end up either in the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa on January 1 or the Pop-Tarts Bowl, which I think is December 28th. And like, look, I get it that this season probably feels unfulfilling for a lot of Notre Dame fans, especially if you think about how you felt when Errico Flores scored against Ohio State. But if Notre Dame ends up in the ReliaQuest Bowl and they beat Tennessee, let's just sort of take the Brian Kelly narrative off the table for discussion purposes. But if they beat Tennessee and they finish 10-3, I'm not saying it's a great season. I'm not saying it's a wildly successful season. But I think if you're a Notre Dame fan, you'd be like, all right, I enjoyed at least the end of it. It's a season that had some moments to it. I had some good memories out of it. Did Notre Dame achieve everything that they set out to, or they should have? No, but like, I mean, if they 10-3 with a win over Tennessee, I think overall, if you're Notre Dame, you feel okay with it. Like it's some proof that things are moving in a good direction, even if they're not moving as quickly as you'd like them to.
Well, you said take away Brian Kelly. What if, but like, take away Brian Kelly, but LSU could be facing the Heisman winner.
I mean, like, that would be interesting. I would love to see Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels against
Jaden.
Ben Morrison, Xavier Watts, this pass rush. Like,
I don't know if they'll play in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, but.
Yeah, like, I don't think Jaden Daniels is probably playing in that game.
Also, take away Brian Kelly. Last week, I think Brian Kelly said he's the best player in the country and he deserves Heisman. Brian Kelly also, after the Alabama game, said Jaden Daniels played good, not great. And I'm sorry, that quote is getting thrown in his face right now as Jaden Daniels is literally right in the thick of the Heisman race. And has 282 yards in the first half tonight. He's really freaking good. And that's a very un-Brian Kelly-like team, I will say, as far as all offense, no defense. Not that he can't be an offensive guy throughout his career, but it's a lot different from what we're used to seeing at Notre Dame. But no, I think an SEC opponent, not to give that league too much respect because they don't need any more than they get, but I think that would be significant. Because the other thing, you want the game to feel like an event. Even last year, so
yeah,
the Gator Bowl, like,
it felt like a big deal.
I was going to say, when's the last time Notre Dame got outdrawn at a neutral site game? And again, location had a lot to do with that, but it happened last year.
The BCS National Championship game?
No, I thought there were more Notre Dame than Alabama.
Oh, you thought so? Okay.
It was, if not, it was close. I mean, I had enough Alabama fans, and again, it was kind of old hat for them even back then, but they're like, holy cow, like, you Northerners really showed out for this. Like, they took notice. But if you're playing Tennessee or LSU or whoever from the SEC, like, it will feel like an event, especially if it's on New Year's Day. And I think that's meaningful, at least for the people in the building who will be a part of that game as you go for presumably your 10th win.
Yeah, I'm with you with that. So, yeah, it's, I mean, overall, I think that, you know, Notre Dame season, there's, I hate the, like, nothing to play for narrative because I just, you know, who's, like, we're not, I'm not in the business of telling a college athlete what you have to play for or not. Something you train for 365 days a year, I think it's kind of ridiculous. But there are some, I think, incentives out there if you're Notre Dame where that if you needed some external motivation, it's still out there for you with or without Brian Kelly. With Brian Kelly, I think it would be That would outdraw
Brian Kelly might recuse himself from the ball game.
I mean, that game would outdraw New Year's Six games.
Oh yeah,
maybe easily.
Last year's I think was the highest non-New Year's Six.
Yeah, that's I think it was higher than some New Year's Six games. This one would be off the charts that way. So yeah, I don't know. I think overall, like Notre Dame, they took care of business today. You know, kind of an underrated thing to do because as much as they've done it at home this year, they haven't really done it on the road. I think I would if they did this to Stanford next week. I realize Stanford is not great, but they're competent. That would probably give me a little bit of a better vibe about like, all right, I would expect Notre Dame to go to a bowl game and take care of whoever they face. You know, whether it's Tennessee. I don't know who else they can play other than Tennessee and LSU at this point, based on how the SEC is breaking down. But I think that'd be pretty entertaining and kind of a good bowl product and a chance to end the season on a high note.
Absolutely, sign me up for it. I think that'd be very, very exciting, especially after what will be a bigger audience next week: the in-person crowd at Stanford or those who get the Pac-12 network that watch the game. And I'm not kidding. I'm gonna say it like
it,
that.
Dinah and the kids are coming out for the trip, and I feel like they should go to the game so they can say they were there, the final Pac-12 network broadcast game, and can be one of 5,000 Notre Dame fans who actually got to see it.
I drove to Evanston this morning so I could say I was in the final game in the history of Ryan Field, which still hasn't officially been announced yet. There was someone walking off the field with a mouth guard they found on the field today. I did not go that far, nor did I scoop up any of the foot-long grass they play on there. But it was exciting. I made it back here in the time for the first quarter, or in the middle of the first quarter, Notre Dame.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't take any marshmallows on my way out of Notre Dame Stadium today either.
Ask Sam Hartman for his cup. Drug test.
Exactly. Yes, it's like this mist. There have been a lot of like interactive fan moments this year that have been kind of fun, and like I think that the Notre Dame Stadium crowd, I give them credit. Every game was listed as a sellout. You know, today was it packed? No, but it felt lively. You know, I think that they've done a good job with the video board. I did laugh out loud when they showed Sam Hartman on the video board after he had checked out of the game for the final time, and the PA was playing Whitney Houston's "I Will Always Love You." There's a sense of humor here about some things now, which I really appreciate because it kind of lightens the mood a little bit makes it more of a kind of a fun atmosphere opposed to kind of the you know, sometimes Notre Dame can be a little quiet. So they don't do a nice job this year. It's a long way of crediting Notre Dame's ops people for doing a good job.
They showed, I don't know if they showed it on the scoreboard, they showed on TV someone's sign that said something about coming all the way from Texas to either see your hug, say, I don't know, it was a little much for me, but it was also pretty funny.
Yeah, they do a good job. It was a good crowd today. Much nicer than Boston College Senior Day last year when I think it was a difference of about 60 degrees. But yeah, Notre Dame goes out, closes out Wake Forest 45-7 in the Sam Hartman Alumni Reunion game.
What's the total aggregate now? 3 years of senior days, because they gave up a score today. It was 55-0 Georgia Tech, right?
99-0. So then, yeah, 144-7 over the last 3 years. Who's next year's hapless victim? Do you know?
No, they haven't announced their schedule yet, right?
Yeah, no, I guess it could be, because I think they're supposed to play Army in like a Shamrock Series.
They were this but weekend. Army does Army's did not sign the contract. They joined the American Athletic Conference for next year, and now they're having second thoughts about it.
Oh, interesting. Good intel.
I wrote that like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, sorry, I missed it. I was going to say, if you listen to all 40 minutes of The Independent, you got a little news at the end. And actually, I have a little nugget, too. I was talking to somebody up in the press box today who's an ACC administrator, and I asked the question that I think we haven't got clarity on. Like, will Stanford games count as part of the ACC allotment? And the answer I got was kind of, sort of, if it's in the natural rotation of the ACC, because it will be, that will count as part of the allotment. But if Notre Dame wants to schedule Stanford as like a, air quotes, non-conference game, then it will not. So sometimes it will count as an ACC game, sometimes it won't. But this person also said, don't hold me to that, because we have to blow up the entire model with Stanford, Cal, and SMU anyway. So what counts for Notre Dame's rotation may be up for discussion.
This is the same league that had Wake in North Carolina scheduled 2-game non-conference.
That was the example I gave to this person. I said, is it kind of like that? And they said, yes, it is exactly like that, where Notre Dame and Stanford could be a league game some years, but also be a non-conference game some years. All that to say, Notre Dame will be independent regardless because of what we talked about at the top of the show. They're getting paid by NBC. So it's good to be Notre Dame. It's good to be 8-3. Marcus Freeman closes out the home schedule with a win. Sam Hartman beats his former school in the alumni reunion game, like I said. And they head to Stanford with, you know, not all their goals in front of them, but still some. So Matt and I will be back early next week.
Great guest coming up.
Yeah, great guest. I think you guys will, and women will, enjoy the guests we have lined up. It's not the girl who threw the marshmallow, but should be somewhat fun regardless. And then Matt and I will obviously do post-game Stanford from Palo Alto. I'll be out there for that one. So I can describe everything that I saw in case none of our listeners were able to.
Pete and I were debating maybe like going live during it, but Pete will be there, and that would kind of mess with the, like, he would know what's going on as we get it on a delay. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing yet. Probably a FUBU, yeah. FUBO, is it?
TV, yeah, FUBO TV. I also don't think that, like, press row etiquette, which has been a topic of conversation in the press box this year. Maybe
Pop, with the Pop-Tarts guy?
Yeah, with the Pop-Tarts guy. There may be some violations there. I'm not sure.
What are they going to do? Kick you out of a Pac-12 network game again? Yeah. There are no more.
I don't think those the PR that they're looking for. They're in the Pac-12 or the Pac-2 as it stands. So anyway, we'll have two shows next week, previewing Stanford and then post-game Stanford. But that's it for this episode of The Independent. As always, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Please like, rate, subscribe, follow the show. Give us a 5-star review. It helps with other people finding out about The Independent. So until we get together Tuesday, he's Matt from The Inside Zone. I'm Pete from the Independent and The Athletic. Thanks for being with us on The Independent.